Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
In this show, we're going to dive deep into flips, wholesales, holding rentals, and creatively structuring deals.
So that we can show you how you can achieve that lifestyle of freedom that you desire. Hey guys, welcome to the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff. Today's show is going to look a little bit different than normal. We're going to start our first ever deal breakdown episode talking about a creative structure deal that we did here in Boise in our very own market that is turning out to be a $250,000 profit deal that's going to allow us to pull out some tax-free money and do some really cool stuff. So listen in to how we made this deal work.
Alrighty, guys. So this deal started off pretty interesting. It came from a previous relationship of somebody we'd previously bought a house from. We've since stayed in contact with them. This is something that we preach on a regular basis to you guys, that the relationships in this game matter. Yep. How you treat people matters, right? Think about how this deal, we wouldn't even have had this deal had we treated this seller, because he was a seller at one point to us. Without respect and kindness and caring and making sure we were setting him up and creating win-win deals. Because we did all those things, he then stayed in contact with us. We stayed in contact with him, and he ended up bringing us an opportunity. So we went to go check out the opportunity with him. It was, at the time, just a simple, pretty straightforward duplex, right? And we're like, okay, how do we make sense of these numbers on a duplex? Well, your rents have to equal more than your mortgage, plus some basic expenses like capital expenditures, which is things like repairing the roof every, 20 to 30 years, replacing hot water heaters every 20 years, AC units every 10 to 15 years, or whatever the lifespan on them are. That sounded weird. Whatever the lifespan on that unit is. Giving it a pronoun, that's weird.
There you go. We're fitting in with today's society,
yeah, we are, brother. Culturally correct. So going over that. So capital expenditures, generally you're going to put away like 5%, or I think a very easy number is $50 per unit. So on this particular asset is $100 per month, right? You're going to have repairs. Repairs are really important. What happens when your tenant breaks something, doesn't say that they broke it, and they're not willing to pay for it? Most of the time you aren't going to get tenants to pay for repairs. So you need to be, again, $50 a door is a pretty safe number, but it also depends. If it's in the ghetto, I'd probably do more than $50 a door. If it's in a super nice neighborhood and rents are really high, this particular asset's in a nice neighborhood and rents were going to be really high. So we don't necessarily need to put away as much, but $50 a door is another safe bet. You have vacancy. Vacancy depends on the market. For our rentals in Indiana, vacancy is closer to 5% because people move out, because they get evicted, because they don't pay rent. In Boise, vacancy is really low because there's not enough places to live. It's also why rent is higher, right? So there's usually a correlation between low rents and high vacancy and high rents and low rents and high vacancy and high rents and low vacancy. So, 3% is a pretty safe number. I think we calculated this asset at 2. So those are some of the basic, really basic things you'd want to watch out for. You need to know your insurance costs. You need to know what your principal and interest and taxes are going to be on this asset when you are underwriting. But so basically, we started underwriting the deal, found out that one side was rented for $800 a month, the other side was vacant. Also, you don't just take what rents currently are as the rent that it could be, right? Because we were going to go make improvements. That was actually undervalued even before the improvements. We could have just probably put this back up for $1,200 a month and got $1,200 aside. We've been totally fine. So what we did is we started talking to the owner, and we quickly decided that he wanted as much money as he could possibly get for it. What he wanted didn't quite match up to what we were willing to pay at this particular time in the market. Instead of saying, oh man, well, he wants more than we can give, there's nothing we can do, no deal, walking away and feeling like we just can't find good deals on the market, we said, what else can we do? And Jeff and I sat down, we thought about it, and we said, okay, if we buy this with our traditional hard money lender and then try to refinance into, some type of long-term 30-year mortgage or 20-year mortgage or whatever, we're going to end up paying 15, 20 grand in hard money cost.
Yep.
That's points and interest. Instead, I can give him that 15, 20 grand back if he's willing to owner carry. What an owner carry is they carry the balance of the mortgage. You then take ownership of the asset. They now have a lien against that property for that amount agreed upon up front. And it's our job to pay that off. Now, the cool thing is you can do this. You get to set the terms. They become the bank. You set the terms, right? Mm. So he didn't want to do this for longer than a year. He wanted to actually delay him making money for 1 year, because what happens is then he had already sold some assets that year, so he didn't want to double down on his income, which then means he pays more taxes. So for him, he's also going to save like 20, 30 grand in taxes, delaying the close of this property by 12 months. So this owner carry is it'll come due in March of 2022. We picked this up in March of 2021.
Yeah. So key breakdown on this, guys, is it's not always the purchase price that's the only indicator, right?
Correct.
There's other things that matter to the seller.
Yep. Yep. So we got this thing for $340,000. And generally with an owner carry, they most of the time want a larger down payment than 20% because that's their security that you're going to do what you say you're going to do, right? We only ended up having to do about 20 grand. So it's 10 grand from Jeff, 10 grand from me. Awesome. We get this duplex. We started the rehab on it. Unfortunately, some things went sideways, but it's okay. We were solutions oriented, one of our core values, and we kept going, right? So at some point between negotiation and closing, we were informed that this tenant in there did not have a lease. Great for us. On a month-to-month person, you just give a notice of non-lease renewal, which is not an eviction, so the rules are a little easier, and we can get this person out. She was a problem tenant for him. She was going to be a problem tenant for us. She turned into a problem tenant for us. So we wanted her out. But some point between him telling us that there was no lease, which was great, it was beneficial to us, and closing, he went in and signed a new 12-month lease with her.
Some point be the day before closing.
Yeah, yeah. So I can't say whether this was intentionally deceiving us or the reasons of why he did it, because she wasn't a great tenant for him. So for him to give her extra protection is very odd. I'm not sure what happened. Mm-hmm. We could have thrown a fit and been weird about it, right? But we approached it with a calm, level-headed mindset, and we said, hey, look, man, this was not the original agreement. I definitely feel shorted because now I can't rehab both sides. And by the way, our original plan was to throw these up on Airbnb. But when you have a tenant in one side and you're trying to Airbnb the other side and they share a wall, in our honest opinion with this particular tenant, we were just guaranteed issues.
Right? Yeah, with a bad tenant, it's a risky situation.
Yeah, she could just make it really unenjoyable to stay there. Yep. She could intentionally turn up music. She smokes cigarettes, which we don't allow smoking at our properties. Mm. So, but being that she's now got a 12-month lease that we didn't create, we don't have those options to say those things. Yep. And we didn't want Airbnb guests dealing with that. So it limited our options as well. So we went back to the owner. We told him these things. We said, this is the pickle you put us in. What are you going to do about it? We stayed quiet. We just shut up. Let him talk. Let them come up with a solution, right?
Yep.
I'm not going to go to him with exactly what I want. Ultimately, what we ended up at was we originally had the owner, Carrie, had a monthly payment tied to an interest-only payment of $800 a month. We basically factored in that we were going to be losing, at the time we thought, about $500 a month in rent from that unit, of what we could have got if we could rehab it.
Yep.
So he ended up reducing his monthly payment from us to him by $500. So we went from an $800 monthly payment down to a $300 monthly payment.
Yep.
I'll be honest, in our lifetime, the chances that we come across another deal like are slim to none. So we have a $300 monthly payment on a $320,000 purchase, right? One tenant doing $800 a month. Our new tenant, I'll let Jeff get into what the new tenant pays in just a minute. But this was a creative way to structure this deal, right? The owner wanted more than we could feasibly give him, or we feasibly felt comfortable giving him.
Yeah.
So we got an owner carry. The financing charges that would have normally gone to a lender went to the owner, giving him more. And then we ended up at the purchase price we wanted to be at. He ended up with the cash that he wanted to end up with, right? And then we also delayed his taxes, so we had additional savings. We worked through the tenant issues. At the time, what did we think back in value was? $560,000, $570,000?
We actually were very conservative when we underwrote it. And we said, I literally just looked at our sheet because I was like, wow, we were dumb. We wrote $475,000, and then like total optimist view was $525,000.
That's crazy. I mean, This was March of 2020.
It was really before, especially like the duplex market took off, right? Single families were starting to go up, and everyone was like, oh, duplex is kind of on a cap rate, kind of on a single family value. Where are we at? And so it was before that really started to kick up.
Yep.
But
yep. And then this is where it gets crazy. Okay. Yep. So Jeff, why don't you tell them what you found out about the zoning of this particular property?
Yeah. So I got real quick recap where we're at right now in the deal is we paid $324,000 on an owner carry. We have $20,000 down. So he is currently carrying $300,000, and it's only costing us $300 a month.
We paid $340, put $20 down. We're in it for
$340, $20 down, and we're paying $300 a month, collecting $800 in rent. So we're actually cash flowing $500 on this property, right? So that's where we're at in the deal. I started looking at it. We actually renovate the unit. So we renovate the unit and we spend 20 grand on rehab. So we did a cosmetic flip, some new floors, new paint, new cabinets, counters. Actually made it really nice because we were still going to stick with our plan of going with the Airbnb once we vacated the other tenancy in January is when her tenancy is up. So we said, okay, let's put a six-month tenant in here to attract a six-month tenant at a high rent. We need to do a nice remodel and then have it easy to roll into Airbnb. So we did a really nice remodel. We ended up renting out that unit for $1,800 a month. So we were obviously wrong on our $500 mark being our correction from the $800 to what we thought market value at $1,200 was. But still, now we're getting $800 from the current tenant and then $1,800 from the tenant that we put into that unit, totaling $2,600 a month. And we pay $300 to hold that property. We also negotiated that our original note was due in January of 2022. Because her lease went to January of 2022, we were able to extend that owner carry by 3 or 4 months because we said, hey, Mr. Seller, you told us she wasn't going to be here. Our plan is to refinance this to get the value that we need on the refi. Mm-hmm. I have to remodel her unit and get a new tenant in there. So you need to give me time from when she's going to be out to remodel, appraise, refinance. So we actually extended it. So now for about an 18-month period, we're cash flowing $2,300 a month on this property. And we only had about a month and a half from when we purchased the property to when we got that tenant placed. So 1 month, a month and a half, we made $500 a month. And 16 months after that, we'll make $2,300 a month on a $20,000 investment. We lined up private capital for the rehab funds, and that kind of is more traditional. But so what we found out is years ago, I got fascinated with this process of condoization. I was living in Portland, and this guy was doing it in way crazy ways. And I was like, man, how can we make this work? So I went to the city and said, hey, I got a duplex. I noticed that there's a townhouse only a couple blocks away that's the same zoning, and it's set up the exact same way as my duplex, but they're selling one side individually. And at first they're like, ah, yeah, no, it doesn't really work like that. So then I called a survey and I said, hey, I see no reason the city should tell me no. And she agreed. She's like, oh, totally. The duplex zoning in that neighborhood allows for townhouses. And if the zoning allows for it, then you just have to do what they call a PUD. It's a planned unit development, and it converts that into a little mini subdivision in the eyes of the city. And that subdivision consists of two townhomes. So why does this matter? Well, our conservative value was $475 on a duplex. We caught up on the market and realized we were about $550 on the duplex. Is what if we flipped it, got tenants in there, sold it as a duplex investment to another investor, or maybe like a house hack for somebody, we could sell it for $550. Well, we sold a 2-1, 800 square feet, about a mile and a half from that, and we got $350,000. And that was about 8 months ago. Mm-hmm. That same house is now selling for $375, and it's 2-1, 800 square feet. My duplex is 2-1, 990 square feet per side. So we went and we did our comps on it and we said, okay, before we spend this money and this time and really kind of battle with the city on it, does it make sense to do this? And we ran the numbers and we came back with a pretty conservative value of $375 per side, meaning that now that asset that was only worth $550,000 after being renovated is now worth $750,000. So we created $200,000 in equity by simply going and doing something that was creative and out of the box. It cost us about $10,000 for the survey and all the engineering and all the paperwork that needed to be done. And it took us about 4 months to get it done, all while we're cash flowing $2,300 a month. So our cash flow actually paid for the entire cost of doing the survey and the engineering. And now those are just a week ago, they became two separate townhouses, which now means when I refinance them, I'll get a higher value. And if I ever need to sell them, I'll have way higher profit margin than I would have as a duplex. So our intent with those projects is still to make them Airbnbs. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be refinancing those units when our owner carry is up at the end of March 2022. When we refinance them based on a pretty conservative, the lender that we work with gives us 75% loan to value. So on 750, they're going to give us right about, what does that work out to? 625, I think.
750,000
times 0.75.
562.
562, that's right. So 562, we bought it for 340, and we'll have spent 40K on, or 40K total on rehab. So it's 380.
We get 182,500 back at closing.
182, and we'll have some miscellaneous costs in there.
Yep.
In the meantime, we cash flow $2,300 a month.
Yeah, our gross cash flow.
Our gross cash flow is $2,300.
Yes.
Yeah, because we're 26 and we're paying him $3,000.
Not net though.
Yeah, because our expenses before expenses. Yes, yeah. But actually on this one during the flip, it is probably pretty close to net because most of those things that would normally be counted as a rental right. are held within the actual flip budgets themselves.
Yeah.
But so we've been cash flowing a fair amount of money, and now we're going to pull out $182,000 and we're going to own that asset. Noah, what is the mortgage payment on that at 5% interest only?
So what did we say? So
562
mortgage and taxes. The taxes on this property are pretty high.
They are.
So it, yep. this could be somewhat skewed, but times 0.005. Okay. So we should be at about $2,800 a month. So $2,800 yep. a month should be our monthly payment. I would say conservatively round up by another $200 just because the taxes on yeah. the property right now or yep. the taxes on the property before the condoization of each unit mm-hmm. was about $4,500 a year, $4,300 a
yeah.
year.
Yep.
So I would add another $200 just because.
Yeah.
So conservatively $3K a month
yeah.
is our principal taxes and insurance.
Yep. And our Airbnb, so we have some other Airbnbs in the market that we do, and we have an arbitrage company that we use. We do a profit split rather than a traditional arbitrage. Mm-hmm. And their numbers on those units conservatively, and I think these are very safe numbers, are about $4,200 to $5,200 a month. So if we just go, hey, let's land it at $4,500 a month minus, or times two is 9,000 minus the $3,000 holding. I'm going to cash flow $6,000 a month on this one property before some of my expenses, but $6,000 is my gross take home before expenses.
Well, we get 70%.
Oh yeah, we get 70%. You're correct.
$4,200. And then I would say, you know, you'd budget. I mean, also too, this is what's cool.
That includes the property management.
They take care of management.
And
so
maintenance.
What does that eliminate? What does that eliminate for us on our, on normally what would be our 10%. Expenses sheet?
Yeah, it's $300 a
yeah,
month.
Yeah, because now, yeah. Well, capital expenditures are still us, but repairs are no longer us.
Yeah, maintenance is them and property management is
and
them.
And property management, yep. which we would already be paying 8 to 10% for.
Yep. So you're
gone.
About 14 to 16% so of that 30. Yeah. So you're really only paying
yeah.
Yeah, to
cool,
get those upsides.
It's crazy to think about it like that.
It's pretty wild.
So, okay, so let's take that out. So 4,200, we should take out, it was $6,000 in gross total income after the mortgage. No, it's nine. So it's a $9,000 in gross income and that split is off the gross.
Yep.
So we get 79,000, geez Louise, times 0.7,
yep.
6,300 minus 3,000 on the mortgage.
Yep.
Is and then 3,300.
Yep. And then 12%
yeah.
for fees.
Yeah. 12%. Okay, so 396 minus.
So we're gonna make about $2,800 to $2,900 a month yep. in cash flow on an asset.
That's gross.
Yeah.
No, that's net. Sorry.
That's net. $2,800 to $2,900 net a month. That is then an asset that's being paid off by tenants. And those are their bottom numbers. Some of their high numbers are a little too aggressive to quote on a show, but we'll touch base in 6 months and see if that's where we land. So this is the power of creatively structuring deals
yep.
because this is a deal that a traditional investor would have turned away.
Yeah,
100%. It would have been like, oh, it doesn't. You would have made like 50K maybe doing a duplex flip. But by the time you jumped through the hurdles, dealt with the tenant, like nobody's doing that for 50K, at least not in our market. They're not. So creatively structuring the deal and then finding a solution throughout the project to be creative. And then again, being creative and not going traditional rental route, doing the Airbnb mm-hmm. route to increase monthly cash flow.
Yep. And then so all in, this asset's going to make just about $34,000 a year.
Yep.
So for both of us, that's great. That's great money.
And that's after pulling out about $180,000.
That's wild.
In tax-free
that's wild.
Money.
Yeah. So for those of you guys that didn't know, I'm not going to lie and act like we're the smartest people ever. We actually just barely learned this probably like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
When you cash out refi, meaning you do the Burr method or you do what we're talking about here, which is also the Burr method, right?
Yeah.
The money that you pull out, it's not income.
It's debt.
It's debt because you put debt on the property to pull that income.
Because I'm borrowing $562,000.
Yep. So it's not taxed.
So that's $180,000 of tax-free money that we will make.
That's wild. Yeah.
And still have a cash flowing asset.
Let's talk about the risk because we can't sit here and say there's no risk.
Yeah.
That's not realistic, yeah. right? So let's talk about what the risk is. So I'd say the number one risk is that the property does not perform to the expectation on Airbnb that we are predicting, right?
Yep.
So what would be our backup plan?
Backup plan, traditional rents, $1,800 each unit, $3,600. So we wouldn't cash flow a ton in that scenario, but we were paying down an asset that we already made $182,000 on. So you have $182,000 safety net. Or your other backup plan is do a cash out refi at 50%. don't pull out the 180. Now you're actually cash flowing, right? Mm-hmm. Because then your payment's probably closer to $2,400, $3,600 in rent. There's some room for cash flow there after expenses. So there's a couple contingencies. So that's the other part, especially when you're being creative, make sure you have contingencies. Because being creative comes with a degree of uncertainty, right? Yeah. That's why everybody doesn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to live and risk and kind of operate in that area of uncertainty, then make sure that you have more certain contingencies.
Yep. Yeah, and then, you know, the other thing I'd say, too, is, like, it's $1,800 a month now, but now you're talking about, like, I feel like you can't not take into consideration the fact that, yes, we're getting $1,800, which we thought was crazy high for one side,
yeah,
but that person still has to live next to the other person.
Yeah.
Which I think brings down the value of the rent.
Yeah.
So you're telling me I couldn't get $2,000 a month for each side when they're both great tenants?
Yeah.
Now here's a strategy we didn't even talk about. Let's say that yeah, the Airbnb doesn't perform as we expected.
Yep.
And we're like, nah, this kind of sucks. What's stopping us from selling one townhouse and owning the other one free and clear?
Yeah. Unless we did the cash out, then we own the other one at 50% LTV.
Sure.
If we didn't cash out, we'd sell it and we'd be into the other one free and clear.
Yeah. Yeah. So
then leverage that debt later on to do something.
Yeah, exactly. So you could go back through and refinance it again and put a cash out. Or you could cash it out. You could put a HELOC on it. You could do lots of different things.
Here's the brilliance of this. Like, yeah, this is a beautiful deal, but also, like, and this is, I'm not going to sit here and be like, you can find these all day. This is kind of a home run deal. It's a no brainer. It's a home run. We're pretty stoked. It's one of the monumental, like, stepping stones for our company, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, we've had some very successful deals, and this is top five. Yep, definitely. Easily. Like, this is top five and gives us an air of confidence to act and be like, hey, I can take this. And not that we do dumb flips, but, like, I feel so much better knowing I have 18 flips going on and all of those could not make money and I would still have 400 grand here.
Yeah.
Like 300 grand. Well, you know, so it gives you that little bit of comfort zone. But this is one deal. Like, if you want to get started in real estate, this could be your first deal. It's a rarity, but it exists.
And we think
this is crazy. We just had Taylor Wood on the show. His show aired this week.
Yeah.
He bought a piece of land for 70 grand, spent about 30 grand, and is selling it for 2 million. So you think I'm cool. Homeboy just made $1.6 million in a year doing nothing but filing paperwork, acquiring property and filing paperwork. Yeah. So get started.
Yep.
Get started because that deal could be out there.
It's like, we go over this almost every single day with our sales team. We won't spend a ton of time on this. But what's more important, figuring out every single aspect of something before you get started or just simply getting started?
Yeah.
And the answer is always just simply getting started.
Yep. Always. Like,
to climb a mountain starts with what? One step.
Yep.
You can't climb the mountain if you're so worried about, like, every single part of, oh, should I climb here? Should I climb there? Well, should I leave tomorrow morning because it's already kind of late tonight?
Yeah,
should I tie my shoes in this way? Should I get a different pair of shoes? The sizes. Yeah. This is a half size too big. I don't think I should climb this mountain.
Yo, this sounds so aggressive. I have a friend like this.
Yeah.
Like, people really operate in this.
So people come to our office all the time looking for help. And sometimes the reasons they're not getting started are real in their head.
Yeah.
But they shouldn't be the reason that they don't get started.
And then they verbalize it and we're like, bro, we don't say that's dumb, but we're like, hey, look at this. And they're like, yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
So
solutions oriented.
Solutions oriented, and then surround yourself by people who do stuff.
Yep.
Real quick tangent on the deal that I don't want to forget, because Noah mentioned we got this deal because we had a good relationship with the seller that we continue to grow, right? The guy that we bought this duplex from, not only did he do an owner carry, but then I developed a relationship with him because I was willing to do some stuff. He left a dirt bike on the property and I made sure the guys didn't throw it away. And I loaded it in my truck and took it to his house. And he's like, that was really nice of you. And I'm like, yeah, it was. It's also a little self-serving because I know that you have money and you have six other properties. So
you would have done it regardless.
I would have. But you also, you like in business, like this is my takeaway is, don't be oblivious and just be like, oh, this guy sold me a distressed property. He's a distressed seller. That's not the case. The dude who brought us his property sold us a distressed property, and now he's one of our private money investors. Like,
we have one, two, three. We have three previous sellers who sold us distressed properties that have all actually turned around and reinvested back into our business.
Number four, because you're not counting the guy from this duplex, are you?
No, I wasn't.
So that's the key takeaway from this. This guy who sold me this deal on an owner carry, we then converted him into a private money lender with additional income that he has, and he just invested on his very first deal with us, invested $125,000 into a flip in Nampa.
Yeah.
So that's the benefit of building relationships. Like, you don't Don't assume someone's selling a distressed property, they're a distressed person. They don't have assets. Why would they want to lend to me? And also, if you can get an owner carry, like that person is financially smart, at least to a degree. They understand that by doing that owner carry, they're making more money. Mm-hmm. Or by doing the owner carry like this guy, he wasn't paying taxes. So that's a person that understands investments, yep. right? So making the pitch to him isn't hard.
No, it's not.
They understand that their money, especially when they held it as a rental, that money was tied to an asset. But really the way most people look at it is I have $300,000 and it makes me this per mm-hmm. month. So all you have to do is make them that or more.
Yep.
And by utilizing private money, I make all the guys more than they're making on their distressed rentals.
So I just did the quick math just because I was curious. So he currently has $445,000 invested in our company.
Yeah.
But if we break that down, did he really invest in Tree City Homes? No. He invested in Noah and Jeff yep. as operators of Tree City Homes. So that's something to keep in mind. Raising private money is not hard, but they do it because they believe in you.
Yeah.
Not because of a brand name or how long you've been yeah. in the market or how well established you are. It's the character. It's your, yep. it's your personal character. It's the small things, right? Like not belittling people in negotiations, trying yeah. to create win-wins, looking at it from their side. Like I could have just said, dude, the amount you're asking is way too much. I'm not paying that. But instead I said, let's think about this. You have a tax bill coming up. How can I help you? What yeah. can I do? Okay, wait a minute. If we delay the actual capitalization of you taking this income until next year, then I went and called my CPA and I was like, how much is this going to save him? He said, roughly 30 grand.
Yeah.
And I said, roughly 30 grand based off how much he'd already made in 2021 selling properties. So again, how are we adding value? All right, cool guys. Well, hey, we appreciate you joining in. This is a new segment. We're pretty excited about it. We hope that it adds value to you. If you have questions on the segment, honestly, we'd love to hear them. And what we'll do is we'll address them like on Instagram or something where it's a little yeah. easier to just give a quick answer. So.
Awesome, guys. Thanks for joining us for the deal breakdown.
Woo. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel in the show notes below. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, feel free to do it via our Instagrams. You can also follow us for our funny content on TikTok.